Welcome to Asset Finance Connect's series of podcasts on the European asset finance industry. I'm Richard O'Donoghue, and throughout this year, I've been chatting to industry experts about the challenges and opportunities facing our industry in 2025 and beyond. As we enter the final few weeks of 2025, I've lined up some great guests to chat about topics such as the Middle East leasing market and the end of lease asset disposition market. As always, thanks to our sponsors Alpha Systems for their support throughout the year, and we'll tell you a little bit more about them later in this podcast. So this month sees the fifth annual Dubai Lease Conference taking place. The conference provides insights and knowledge about the opportunities that exist in the Middle East and Africa for the asset finance industry. Today, we're going to discuss some of those opportunities. And to help me explore this topic, I'm delighted to be joined by a fellow Irishman, Ger Regan, who runs Altalease Capital in the United Arab Emirates. Ger, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate the offer to join your podcast. I'm a loyal follower and delighted to participate.
Well, you're going to be invited back to more podcasts, Ger, if you're a loyal follower. It's always great to have at least one. Yeah. But we always start with asking people to introduce themselves and maybe introduce Altalease Capital as well.
Sure, absolutely. I suppose, you know, without going back too far, Irish Dublin, a GA man at heart, but spent kind of 20 years in the asset finance industry in Ireland, in Dublin, with Lombard Bank of Ireland, AIB. All in the asset finance space and the vendor finance space, which was, you know, a fantastic learning curve at the time. Really up until 2007, as you're probably familiar yourself, you know, 2007 to 2012 were a difficult period, you know, in Ireland during the recession, you know, in the asset finance and vendor finance industry. But those of us that were active vendor financiers were suddenly forced into roles that were, you know, non-descriptive from the point of view of recoveries. And I think in Lombard at the time, and part of the OBS strategy was, you know, recovery, and a lot of us became recovery specialists and experts in roles that we weren't really, really familiar with. Which was a difficult period in Dublin. It was a very, very small city and a small country, really, where you unfortunately you had to carry out, you know, roles and services that were not accustomed to your day to day activity. But which was difficult to do in the context of a career, you know, from a career pathway and the hardships that people had to endure during those times. I was lucky enough, you know, to travel in my early days in the midst of my sporting career in Dublin and Dubai in the Middle East, and had become a, you know, very kind of a port of call during the early 90s and 2000s. And, you know, now I've, with my wife, Linda, and the three kids all here and have grown up here. I think in 2011, we just felt that, you know, we felt, you know, opportunity to explore, you know, really to explore what the world had and the, you know, what was out there, and a new challenge. And I came out here and I got to meet some excellent people during that time in 2011 and 12. And I took a position with Ritchie Brothers Auctioneers in 2012, and under the guidance of Mr. Steve Barrett, God rest him, one of my, you know, earlier mentors in this region. And I got teaching with the Higher Colleges of Technology as a business lecturer. And that was the beginning. And the beginning of a career that has now spanned 15 years in the Middle East. And, you know, certainly the first step with Ritchie's was the learning curve of knowledge building with a view to, you know, asset financing and asset disposal management combined, which were the, you know, were the foundation and building blocks of kind of where we are now today.
And I guess for listeners, I probably need to explain briefly GA. It's a very unique Irish sport, but for most of our listeners in Europe, if they're in capital cities, certainly there will be GAA clubs as well. I mean, my son lived in Copenhagen for a while, and there were two GAA clubs there. So it's a very uniquely Irish experience, but also being embraced internationally. And I know in Dubai and the Emirates generally.
Absolutely. You know, I was lucky enough during my younger days to have a fantastic Gaelic football and hurling career, you know, having represented Dublin, my county, at you know, all levels of sport. Injuries had a major factor in the prevention of my career going beyond a certain age, as it happens to us all. But, you know, here in the Middle East, Gaelic football and hurling is a tradition, of course, like it is globally. I fully participated with the local GA clubs out here, and still do with a colleague from North County Dublin. Every Sunday morning, we still hurl and play every Sunday, just to have that feel and remembrance of home and the culture, you know, to keep the culture alive. Yeah.
And we talk in Asset Finance Connect about building a community of people in the asset finance industry. And in many ways, AA is all about a community as well. So it's kind of a nice link. Sure. Talk to me, though, about you went out in 2011, and I had spent a bit of time in my career around about the same time in the Middle East. And the thing we were always told from a technology financing point of view was the market didn't really exist. Nobody was interested in leasing. They just wanted to lease big assets. Was that reality at that time? And what's happened in the meantime?
Yes. I look at the last kind of 13 years as, and I kind of would really, Richard, break it into stages of learning, and I think all of us, at our careers out here, we'll look at the various strategic points of where you see those opportunities and look at the challenges that circumvent the asset finance industry in the region. I think the first phase, when I look at my career here, kind of on a back to front kind of basis, when I work with Ritchie's, Ritchie's being the largest auctioneering company in the world, for disposal of construction equipment and transport equipment. I'm sure, many of the Asset Finance Connect listeners will know who Ritchie's are. My role really was more towards a focus on financial institutions and corporate markets with a view to stressed asset, stressed asset management. So basically what I was doing in Lombard, but doing it on the opposite side of the field, where working with financial institutions, banks, rental companies, global oil and gas companies with a view to asset disposition and looking at assets to put into auction, be them stressed, be them, unencumbered, be them, surplus to requirements, but really bank stressed assets. Now, when you've got bank stressed assets, the question is why? The first question is the why of what product it's relating to, how it's stressed, why it's stressed, what's the nature of its stressed engagement. And then you have to look at the channels of methodology to dispose of those. So breaking that down, I was lucky with Ritchie's to cover Asia, Africa, the Middle East. Worked in India for 3 years on projects with, multinational oil and gas companies, Borneo, Myanmar. The knowledge of both asset financing and recovery then started spanning this region in its entirety. But when you take the Middle East in particular, and you look at the Middle East strategy with a view to how my role in Ritchie's was relevant to supporting banks and financial institutions, firstly, you look at the product. Certainly, you look at the capability of what we were familiar with in a European mindset was regulatory practices, the ability to recover an asset, the ability to have swift court-appointed processes that allow for institutions to dispose of an asset in the event of default. The simple question or the simple answer to that was we just didn't have it here. In the context of there was no leasing environment, and we're talking 2013, 14, 15 here from the early days of my career, no leasing environment, no financial leasing environment, all lending asset financing done by way of a loan with a mortgage. So if a funder, a major institute, a bank or a financial institution or a non-bank wishes to recover an asset, it was a court-appointed process, which meant that the delay in being able to execute and recover an asset was just, it could stretch for even a year up to 2 years. That in itself was the mindset trigger for me to say, how do vendors, distributors, OEMs engage in funding practices that will allow them the freedom of their end users obtaining assets on lease, operating lease, whichever facility they're looking to use other than lending. And that really took me to kind of a point in time in 2015 when I left Ritchie's to a point where I say, okay, I'm going to now explore this financing mechanism with a view to, A, knowledge building, but seeing how, if there's this huge gap in product, how we can actually look and how I can look at it with a view to saying, well, how can I take something forward here? You initially come to the region and think you might stay for 3 or 4 years. When you see an opportunity and you see challenges in place and you realize that things are not in the same context of European standards, well, then you see there's an opportunity to grow something here. So that was really the first 4 years or 5 years of the learning curve on product recovery and being able to integrate that whole kind of a financing and leasing model to be able to see where the challenges lay in execution.
And now a word about our sponsors, Alpha Systems. If you're moving into new regions such as the Middle East,
You'll need a platform that can support local market requirements. Alpha Systems delivers a single solution that meets the origination, servicing and collection needs in all your regions without the need for additional instances. There's also sophisticated tooling for portfolio acquisition and scaling up in general. Find out how Alpha Systems can support your geographic expansion at alphasystems.com. That's A-L-F-A systems.com.
And maybe let's sort of unpick some of those topics. So maybe talk about the regulatory environment. You know, does it differ significantly across the region? I know you're very UAE focused, but you've experience in other African and GCC markets as well. So talk a little bit about how that's evolved, say, since 2015.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you take the GCC as a whole, has been significant country changes with a view to leasing and the advancement of leasing in the region. I'll come back to some of those particular countries in a second. But just on the reflection of the UAE, just coming on from our previous conversation, you know, the regulatory position that allowed for, so, you know, every funder or European funder or European lessor will know that whatever governance or regulations involves the product of leasing in that jurisdiction, the freedom of recovery and the freedom of execution of repossession of that asset is vital to that asset risk. So if you're taking asset risk, you know you've got to be in a position to be able to recover that asset. We here just did not have that. So while my career then evolved through a number of leasing entities and non-bank financial institutions up to kind of 2018, the relationships I held then with a number of distributors in OEM and trying to support, you know, you're trying to support them with a lending product where ultimately it's balance sheet risk as opposed to asset risk. And then you're measuring that against bank appetite, risk appetite, credit appetite for the funder that you were working for, and been able to commit to a distributor or a dealer locally that you can actually serve them from a vendor financing program, because it was all down to credit risk as opposed to asset risk. So you knew then that you couldn't firmly set up a vendor financing program through a tech platform or through something that where you could actually have a freedom to flow a deal end to end that could be credit underwritten through a credit scoring tool, all these blocks and challenges. It was very much a paper-based driven environment. But if we were to fast forward that to 2018, I was working with a non-bank financial institution in Abu Dhabi at the time. In the back of my mind, I always had felt that, you know, that leasing it will happen someday. I obtained the first draft of a finance leasing law in 2018, which my CEO at the time, Lant, gave to me, and he said, here, he said, this is something you'll be extremely interested in, but which of course I was, because I knew once there was an indication of finance leasing as an indication that something was happening, I knew that it was going to be a springboard to something bigger, you know, in a couple of years. But to my dismay, the leasing law that was written at the time here in 2018 was just unworkable. You know, I went to the back page to try to look at the recovery methodology, the perfection, the security, but it was just, you know, it was an unworkable law at the time, which was extremely disappointing in the fact that, you know, I knew then that it was going to set us back in this region a number of years before that law then was rescinded or modified. So changes that then, you know, to fast forward this conversation, I suppose, a couple of years. In 2021, I got involved with the Ministry of Finance and the IFC World Bank as a kind of a strategic partner, a strategic advisor to support this evolution of the amendment to the old law to the rewriting of the new law, which was now built on UNIDROIT international standards. That process kind of took care of kind of COVID days, 21, 22 and 2023. And thank God in November 2023, we had the issuance of the finance lease law revision number 32. Which was issued in November 2023, just before the leasing conference in 2023, even though it was 5 years later, it was a tremendous achievement just to get that done. Because at the same time, we also worked on the secured collateral law and the invoice factoring and receivables financing law as well. So three laws that were hugely important to circumventing all types of working capital products. So that's in a nutshell, I suppose, how my role here in the last 6-7 years has kind of worked, you know, within the Altalease capital framework of Altalease Capital being a broker, you know, supporting OEMs, supporting deal management and supporting customers on both sides, trying to place deals and support, you know, deals in both the UAE, KSA and Africa as well. My role on the outside was to try and, you know, bring that knowledge of the adaptation of financial leasing as a product, you know, its importance, its flexibility and what it means for the UAE, but not just the UAE, but what it means on the outside for captives, for new market entrants, for funders. It was going to be with the age of technology driving growth, with the age of the construction market, you know, my relationships with OEMs and distributors have grown over the years. I could see their needs and wants. You know, I could see how things were happening here. So, you know, we'll park that for a secondary conversation on the opportunity, I'm sure. But to relate that back on where we are today in the UAE, yes, we've made huge strides, absolutely huge strides. Waiting on one piece of final legislation on the implementation regulation for the finance leasing law, which has taken a little bit longer than I thought. Fingers crossed for early next year. And the earlier, just on that point, the evolution locally in the GCC, yes, Saudi Arabia have made significant advancements in finance leasing in the last 10 years. Their leasing environment is probably 6 or 7 years ahead of the UAE. They would have had probably 16, 17, probably 6 or 7 non-bank financial institutions just providing kind of asset financing. But now under the SAMA central bank regulations and licensing, they have up to 25 finance leasing companies in Saudi. So they're really, really pushing hard and integrating within the dealer and the OEM network in Saudi and Egypt. Egypt's industry, finance leasing industry, is concrete. It's been in place for a number of years. I have a number of colleagues and friends in the Egyptian leasing industry who I'll meet at the leasing conference coming up now very, very soon. But that's another economy that and leasing industry that we should be looking at, and how the evolution of both Saudi and Egypt have become very, very focal in the development of leasing in the region.
Well, it appears to be aligning more with what we'd be familiar with in Western Europe. What about some of the other aspects, for example, ownership culture, availability of credit information, the types of things that a leasing company needs when they're going to incorporate in a new market?
Yes, absolutely, Richard. There has been significant advancements, as the world has seen in technology in the last kind of 10 years, the UAE in particular. How would a leasing environment adapt? The ownership usage versus ownership culture is changing. There is that degree of, you know, rental versus ownership versus, it's becoming a more, especially across in the transportation, construction equipment, technology in particular, is that what has happened in the past where without a leasing product, you're forced into taking a loan. You know, you're forced into taking a loan for 4 years, but you don't want a loan. So you're looking at your EMI and your monthly installment on the loan to try and minimize your cost of borrowings over that particular period of time versus your project costs. Whereas if you could take a lease for 2 or 3 years and revolve your asset across those particular period of project-based, you know, financing needs, would have been a lot more flexible. But a lot of contractors, in particular rental companies, are forced into, how would I say, taking out borrowings as opposed to a leasing because it's just not there. Or one of the biggest factors or I suppose pain points that probably contractors and transportation companies, truck companies have is, you know, using supplier finance and dealer financing to help them, which puts pressure on the dealerships, you know, it forces. So many of the family offices that would have dealerships and major OEM brands under their umbrellas, you know, they wouldn't say they're forced. They are asked to provide payment plans at the point of sale for trucks and for various different assets, which of course naturally a distributor doesn't want to lose a sale, but ultimately, you know, if they don't provide them with some form of payment flexibility or some form of on-book in-house financing, you know, they will go somewhere else. The pressures of financing in the past versus what the future can hold. Well, the AECB has been created, I think, about 8 to 10 years ago now, which provides a financial tool, a mechanism for automated credit scoring based on credit history. Technology, the advancements of technology globally that are deploying, you know, very, very prominent technology features into you know, global leasing companies that, you know, that can be adapted in this region as well. You know, security perfection methodology, one of the biggest concerns or the biggest aspect of any lessor looking to set up under a finance leasing mechanism is there. So under the secured collateral law, there's now a 15-day fast track approval process for a recovery mechanism to obtain an asset in the event of default. So all of these little, you know, tools to support a lessor or a leasing company are here, of course, waiting to see them in action and waiting to see the actual result of all of these changes in action is important. But we believe as I won't say policymakers, but the policymakers that have made the policies, we are the ones that want to adapt them. We believe that what's been built has created the, you know, the building blocks for, you know, an effective leasing environment in this region. Now, be it finance leasing or be it operational lease, I think just to clarify for some of the, you know, the listeners again, you know, you can conduct. So one of the key features here in the UAE at the moment is operating lease, which is rental, which is like a lease to own model. It's quite popular in vehicles. It's quite popular in other asset classes. But it's, again, it's not common where it's viewed that it's an actual op lease. Op lease, I think, going back to your question of ownership. When you're providing an op lease structure, the ownership context and wording often, you know, in Europe, it doesn't really come into play, where it's the cyclical or the sustainable cycle of reduce, reuse, recycle that asset and revolve that asset, where here there's a couple of players, you know, involved in kind of lease to own models where they would provide something on an operating lease, but then ultimately uplift that sale at the asset and invoice it out at the end of the term, which suits, but it could be more, a little bit more expensive. But the usage, there is a degree of ownership mentality here in the region. Probably in probably 90% of cases of deals that you get is I want to own. So it's really only over time that, you know, we'll find this kind of new way of leasing, and the revolution of assets of usage will only happen over you know, a phase period in the next few years. But certainly, the tools to change and the tools to adapt and the tools to encourage, you know, other market entrants or to encourage global OEMs to look at, okay, you know, how can I possibly look at my captive financing program setting up in the UAE maybe next year or in a year and a half? Or how can we, you know, engage with, you know, other institutions on a partnership basis with a view to how can we structure and how can we use the UAE's financial districts to be able to structure opportunities. So the building blocks are certainly there, yes.
And maybe expand a little bit on partnership, because the way you've described the market, you know, European leasing companies may say it's becoming similar to Europe. Therefore, there's no difference. If I'm able to open an office in Germany or in France, I can open an office in the UAE and start doing business. Is that the right way to think about it, or is partnership still important?
Yeah, partnerships are important. I think we're at a very, very early stage of creation of partnerships. But I think partnerships with, you know, either new leasing companies or those that understand the industry to help those, help, you know, as I mentioned earlier, captives or new leasing companies come to the region. You know, if they're currently serving existing, you know, have a network of OEMs and distributors that are working with in Europe, well, how can they adapt the same? The question is, how can they adapt the same principle and same, you know, style of leasing and services that they currently are providing to these, their, you know, their clients in Europe? Funding is the biggest challenge. If there's an institution that has a wealth of debt behind them that can come to this region and bring debt, we're, you know, absolutely great, and to be able to position themselves under the structures that I alluded to quite easily and then start leasing directly utilizing their own funding. Partnerships through the banks for independent lessors needing to look at, say, factoring and purchase of receivables, that has been, it's been difficult and it is a challenge, because our banking system here is kind of quite not up to, no disrespect to our bankers, but when you're looking at bringing leasing and adapting leasing into the region, banks see that as asset financing. So you're trying to look at bridging that leasing mindset versus what the banks see as an asset finance product. And secondly, the bank's risk and credit criteria, you know, when it comes to assessment, is still in the old school style of balance sheet, and taking a balance sheet risk, and being able to structure a leasing transaction when you're taking balance sheet risk and not really looking at the asset risk. Or when you have the concept of, well, it's an operating lease and the return of that asset at the end of the term, it's the documentation that's required to integrate that into the banking mindset. And secondly, I suppose lastly, I'd say appetite, you know, appetite on deal sizes. Now we know, and we've worked with a number of partners where you know, deal size could trickle from 50,000 dirhams, you know, say 10,000 euros up to 100,000 euros for, say, like 400,000 dirhams. Bank appetite at that level to churn that type of deal, it's not really hitting their sweet spot. Many would like to think that they're getting the 1 million or the 2 million or 3 million, you know, dirham deals, say 600,000-700,000 euros. And they'd have this criteria and say, no, no, it's not our appetite. And it's difficult for banks, many banks, to take on that type of churn product that we want from a captive partner or a funder, ultimately, to say that they have the capability of deploying, you know, debt at certain levels. And that has been the difficulty for, I won't say for many lessors, but I've seen it happen on occasion where funding partners, a necessity, while are a necessity, have been a challenge to execute. With the age of private credit, with the age of private debt becoming a very much significant part of the Middle Eastern region, in especially in the factoring and the invoice financing and the buy now, pay later space, we've seen that model heavily evolve. And I've spoken to a couple of funders myself in that space, and they're very keen to look at asset financing and leasing on an independent level. So, but partnerships are key. I think it's just a matter of, you know, spending the time structuring them as best as possible and understanding your product and understanding your market fit, you know, looking at the asset class, you know, looking at, you know, the actual deployment of that asset. The one thing I would say about the asset class is that there is this older legacy mindset of recovery. You know, the old days of unable to recover an asset in the event of default still rests in the minds of many of the bankers who would be unfamiliar with the new laws and the regulatory system changes, where secured collateral in the banks, it's now their secured collateral. It's no longer a mortgage. And there's a lot of these learning curves that we're trying to, you know, as part of the secured collateral network group that we have here also. Again, as part of the leasing conference next week that the guys will allude to, is that the you know, there's been a lot of change. It's just a matter of being able to look at those changes and adapt to the asset and look at the asset, as well as, I think, Richard, you mentioned, you know, other services that are attached to asset recovery. Now that asset recovery has changed and the perfection methodology has changed, yes, it's opened the doors to, you know, asset recovery management companies, security management companies. I've set up a small auction company myself in the last couple of years to deal with stress assets, because we can see that over the next couple of years, a transition on additional services will be needed and will be required. So, you know, it's, but lastly, yeah, partnerships are crucial from a knowledge perspective, but also crucial from an execution perspective.
And you've given a great summary there. And I think my kind of takeaway is there's been a lot of progress. The market has become perhaps more aligned with what we're familiar with in Western Europe, but there's still a long way to go to make leasing as prevalent a product as we would see today in Western Europe. And I guess that leads to my final kind of question to you, which is, where do you think the market will be, say, in 5 years' time? What would you be hopeful for, and maybe what's realistic?
Yeah, where do I see it go? Well, I think, you know, as we come to the end of 2025, what did I expect in the last 5 years? Well, you know, based on timelines. So yes, 2018 and 2023 was a five-year gap between old law, new law, 2023, 2025. What are we waiting for from a finance leasing perspective? Well, we're just waiting on an implementation regulation. And that means that it's a governing body to actually issue licenses to new entrants or new companies that are looking to set up, or to provide licensing to some of the captives that are already here that may be just working closely with their distributors, but not actually lending or leasing themselves, but are providing maybe a back-to-back, you know, leasing concept. So when we set foot in 2026, I do believe that, you know, from an Altalease perspective, you know, leasing will be, from our perspective, is obtaining a finance leasing license next year. But I think once one company does it, or once one company has the ability to carry out that activity, I know from my conversations with many captives in the region, and, you know, in the UK and even in the US, you know, they are keen to come and set up, and they are keen to come to support their distributors locally. And I think once we can find that stepping stone and that proof of concept that, you know, the first leasing company, there was a finance leasing transaction here under these particular guidelines, and its governance is under certain, whatever governance and licensing regimes are there, it'll definitely bring many a captive through many industries, I think, to the region, especially in technology. I really believe that technology is one of the key industries and the growth of AI, particularly in the next 5 years. So really, to summarize, Richard, I see some huge potential. I just hope that it can be, I won't say fast-tracked, but I think we should see the evolution of change, you know, from the shift away from lending to leasing, the opportunity for distributors themselves, in particular, to carry on what they're doing, even on their in-house financing. Now, many don't want to do it because they're utilizing their own treasuries capital to fund their own in-house financing programs. But the opportunity for new lessors to integrate into these captive models that are already there, like we know Komatsu Finance is global. We know JCB Finance is global. We know JLG, we know Terex. They're global captive organizations that I've no doubt that in their own minds, they would say, well, how can we look at the Middle East and then provide the similar financial product from the Middle East and then continue to do that into KSA, Saudi, Qatar, and all across the GCC. So definitely see fruits of opportunity, but certainly would see at least 4 or 5 leasing companies here, if not 5 or 6 private entities in the next 5 years, but also see a large contingent of captives set up in the next number of years as well. Yeah, that's the goal. After that,
that's the aspiration. That's great. And look, I think it's going to be a very exciting market, as you say. I hear a lot of captives, a lot of independents wanting to go into the Middle East, wanting to start off normally in the UAE, and they're trying to work out how best to do it. And I think you've touched on it today, talking about partnerships, that will remain important. And that will be probably the route for many of the new entrants. I just want to conclude with one thing, which is I thought we were going to make it through the first podcast of the year where we hadn't mentioned AI, and you managed to sneak it in at the very end. So I don't know whether I'm ecstatic or disappointed, but you did get the AI word in there as well, just to throw that in there. But look, Jared, it's been a real pleasure. It's been very insightful. I think most of us are unaware of all the developments that have been happening in the region. And I think you've given us some great insights into the progress that's been made over the last number of years and the opportunity that still exists. So thank you very much for taking the time to chat to us today, and best of luck with the conference.
Thanks a lot, Richard. I appreciate it. And the offer to come and have the podcast with you. And just on a final note, if any of the listeners that are going to tune in to this over the coming weeks and days, you know, by all means, please reach out. You know, we're always encouraging, you know, people, you know, once say people, other distributors that want to penetrate the region, or OEMs that want to get more involved, please just come and just connect with me, you know, and happy to help, you know, on and advise whatever questions they may have. So we're delighted to be on the podcast, Richard, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Jer. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Asset Finance Connect, sponsored by Alpha Systems. Despite our shared nationality, I first encountered Jer earlier this year when he contacted me following our podcast with Bengayi Kumbala of Innovant. We subsequently spoke, and he told me about the changes that have been taking place in leasing markets across the Middle East. We all know that there are huge business opportunities in the Middle East, but in my experience, very few European asset finance companies, including captives, have been very successful in developing business there. It was therefore great to get insights from someone who spent many years in the Middle East and to better understand the opportunities that exist for our industry in that region. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'll have a few more episodes between now and the end of the year, so look out for those. Thanks for listening.